number one is the internet really is just a medium to reach and communicate with people. It's not a business unto itself. So we use internet marketing, the term internet marketing, as shorthand. But I think it confuses a lot of people, especially a lot of people that are new to business or don't have much business experience. And there's this thought that, well, there's something magical about the internet. You know, if I just do something on the internet, I'll make money and things, the great things will happen. And that's really doesn't work that way. It's you need a business concept first, and even before the business concept is you need a market. You need a market that wants and or needs something, and you need to be a top level, top grade provider of that thing, whatever it is. And then the internet becomes interesting.
Welcome to another Live with Roy interview, where you can listen in absolutely free as I, Roy Furr, interview the world's leading experts on information marketing and publishing, internet marketing, copywriting, selling, business success, and a whole lot more. You can browse the entire Live with Roy archives, download past calls, and join us to get first priority notification as soon as new interviews are available, all by visiting www.livewithroy.com. Again, the address is www.livewithroy.com. Now let's tune in for another exciting interview.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Live with Roy. And today on the call, I have a very interesting guest that you may know well already. His name is Ken McCarthy. And in 1994, he put on the very first internet marketing seminar. And this was something that there's an interesting story surrounding the launch of the Netscape browser, and I'll ask Ken that directly. But since then, Ken has been ahead of everyone on just about every internet marketing technology out there, including banner ads, email direct marketing, autoresponder follow-up sequences, pay-per-click, long-tail search advertising, niche marketing online, the new service that was Google AdWords, online video marketing, mobile marketing, and a whole lot more. And a who's who of marketing has turned to Ken for his internet-based marketing knowledge. And I'm going to start that list off with the legendary Gary Bensavenga, who is claimed by many to be the world's greatest living direct response copywriter. And Ken, you have a letter from Gary that I found on one of your sites, and it says, "Ken, the System Club giveaway is beyond the pale. You shouldn't be sending me more stuff. I should be sending you more money. But I want to have a shot at owning everything you've got, whether I have to pay or not, so count me in. Ken, in this past year, I feel you have hit warp speed in accelerating away from everyone else in the internet marketing training marketplace. It reminds me of what the poet T.S. Eliot observed when evaluating the great literary figures of all time. He said, Shakespeare and Dante divide the world between them. There is no third. In the universe of internet marketing training, you own it. There is no second. One reason I say this is because the best investment I have ever made in internet marketing materials is your System Club CD program. I'm into just my third CD, and it's changing virtually everything I'm doing for the better. And I was no slouch beforehand. But when you have, as a Mind Master support team, the most successful practitioners in the internet marketing world, well, how can anyone not improve? I find myself dropping even high-priority projects to just listen and take notes of everything you've said. Gary Bensavenga. Also, Perry Marshall is a longtime student of Ken, Glenn Livingston, Lloyd Irvin, Drayton Bird, who is David Ogilvy's right-hand man in the UK, and countless real internet entrepreneurs who are innovating in the trenches every day, even the guys behind the Ginsu knife. And so when Ken talks about internet marketing, about marketing in general, very smart people listen carefully, and I'm excited to talk about internet marketing and direct marketing with Ken today. So Ken, welcome to Live with Roy, and I look forward to what we're going to talk about today.
Great. Thanks a lot, Roy. Thanks for this opportunity to talk.
Yeah, well, thank you. How about we just start way back in 1994, and you tell me about what was the very first seminar about marketing on the Internet.
Well, it would help maybe to set the stage for what things were like back then.
Okay.
There was no online media to speak of. There were bulletin boards, BBSs. People that have been around a long time know about those. That was sort of a hobbyist thing. There was CompuServe. There was Prodigy. AOL was so small that you could actually write to Steve Case, as I did, and get a response, personal response back.
Wow.
There was stuff going on, but it was pretty scattered, and it was pretty unclear how it was ever going to evolve into anything big. And in 1993, I saw the web browser, and I was like, "Wow, that could really do it. What we need," because back in those days, if people that are around a long time may remember, you had to pay for access by time. You'd log on, and the cash register would start ringing. And, you know, that model was really rough. And if you're using a BBS, sometimes you had to call a long-distance number to access the computer, and that resulted in some shockingly high phone bills for people. And that just wasn't going to work, you know?
You know, I'm pretty young, but I remember when America Online, AOL, was, I believe I remember when it was 5 hours a month was their standard tier of service. And I certainly remember 15 hours a month. And, mm-hmm. you know, considering there are folks that spend 15 hours a day online today. So it was a very different world back then. Absolutely.
And so that kept a limit on everything. And then the other big limit was, you know, if you wanted to put out content online, you had to develop the content for Prodigy, and then you had to do something completely different for CompuServe and something completely different for AOL. So, you know, it was this fragmented marketplace. Access was not easy for people, and all those factors kept a real limit on the potential of online media. So the Internet was always there lurking in the background, but it was hard to access for most people, hard to use. And so when the web browser came along, which we all take for granted, that really was absolutely revolutionary. And it was pretty primitive when it first came out. I mean, you had one choice of background color, gray. And, you know, it was pretty basic, but it was universal. So you could create content once, and it would be accessible to everybody who was online. And then anybody anywhere in the world could access your site without long-distance charges. And that's really what lit the fuse behind the whole Internet explosion. That and the idea that this could be monetized. And what put it in people's mind that it could be monetized was the invention and dissemination of the banner ad. And that was done, originally it was done by O'Reilly and Associates, but they didn't really push it. They weren't really professional marketers. They were more publishers. But they actually deserve the credit for the very first banner ad. But the first people to ever sell the banner ad in a serious way, who were marketing and advertising savvy, was an online magazine called Hotwired. And that effort was led by a guy named Rick Boyce. And, you know, people saw the numbers and they saw, wow, if we could just get enough traffic, we could sell ads, and the ads could support our publishing efforts. And that really is what the Netscape IPO in 1995, that's really what captured everybody's imagination, and the web just took off from there. Now, Rick Boyce was a student of ours, and he was working for Hal Reining Partners as a media buyer, and that's one of the jobs in an ad agency. It's not just all creating ads. You have to figure out where to place the ads. And so that was his job, to figure out, okay, how are we going to actually deploy this advertising message? I mean, where are we going to put it? Which is a big deal in traditional advertising, and it's a big deal in Internet advertising too, which we might cover in a bit. But he was very far-sighted, very broad-minded, and very aware that the media world was fragmenting. You know, this is, again, kind of a trip down memory lane, but, you know, I can remember when there were only three channels on TV, you know, and that created a certain kind of media world. And then as soon as you had cable with the proliferation of channels, that really changed everything. And then you know, proliferation of magazines, and then, you know, Rick actually realized that we weren't going to have, you know, 50 channels, we were going to have 5,000 channels, and I said, well, actually, Rick, we're going to have 5 million, and I guess I was underestimating, and that really perked up his attention, and he became one of our early students, and he went off and joined Hotwired and was the number one leading banner ad salesman on the planet for a while. That's what all was going on in 94. You had the first commercial web browser, which was put out by Netscape, which was developed by Mark Andreessen, and he's the guy you may see in the news now. He's a little bit bigger now, and he's bald, and he's kind of a major force in high-tech financing now, and venture capital. You know, he's behind Facebook and Twitter and a whole bunch of other things. He had early investments in those things. So our seminar was very simple. We wanted him to speak, and he did, which was no easy thing to arrange, but we did arrange it. We had a guy who was at the time known as Mr. Internet, believe it or not. The Internet was so obscure, even in San Francisco, that one guy had earned the title of Mr. Internet, and that was Mark Graham. And then I spoke. And then we had guys that were actually doing business on the web. And this was 94, and these were real trailblazing pioneers. We had something called Career Mosaic, and now, of course, we've got Monster Board for want ads and so on, but the very first company to do that in a big way was Career Mosaic. And I'm trying to think of who else we had. Oh, yeah, we had a really fascinating guy, Mark Fleischman, who was the first full-time commercial independent web developer. You know,
oh, wow.
The first guy to make, I know, he was really the first guy. And like all these things, it started in San Francisco or the Bay Area, really. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, this poor guy, how's he going to make a living? There may not be enough work to keep him busy. but he was doing things like selling Plantronics, those headsets. They were one of his clients. He put a local newspaper published in Palo Alto online. I think it was the first, believe it or not, newspaper to be online 7 days a week.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, those were... Yeah, so it was a really interesting time, and you know, it was really exciting. And we were the point of the seminar, because there wasn't a whole lot of marketing going on, there wasn't a whole lot of selling, there was no easy way to take money back then. There were no secure websites back then. I mean, this is really early days, but we were just trying to persuade all those technical people in San Francisco that they should stop spending all their time and money developing CD-ROMs, which at the time was thought to be like, that was it, that was going to be the coolest thing ever, and to stop doing that and to start developing websites, because we thought that was going to be way more promising. And it turned out we gave them good advice. I know of at least two companies that had at least 20 employees developing websites within about 2 years after that seminar.
Wow. So,
yeah.
Now, if I remember right, there's an interesting story about actually getting Mark Andreessen to come, because back in 1994, when you were planning this seminar, he had created a graphical web browser through a university or educational project, but Netscape hadn't been created, and in 1994, I believe it was at, you know, almost concurrent with your seminar, Netscape was supposed to be launching the very first commercial web browser. And did he have to put off the launch of Netscape to attend that seminar? Is that what I understood?
No. First it's important to know that this whole thing got started by a guy that just did it for the hell of it. He was working, he was going to school at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, or however they say it.
Yeah.
And that is also the National Supercomputing Center for the United States.
Okay.
And so he was a student there, and he found the place kind of boring, as indeed it is. I mean, you know, it's a typical government-funded operation. They, you know, consume lots of money and develop nothing useful. and he found the whole thing kind of boring. But he had a job in the physics lab, you know, just to make money, spending money. And that's where he first saw the web. And the web at that time was literally not private. It was never meant to be private, but it was designed with a very small group of people in mind. It was for high particle physicists or guys that do a very particular kind of experimentation in physics that requires really expensive equipment. And there's probably only like 50 places in the whole world that do it. And there's a center for all that in Switzerland called CERN, C-E-R-N.
Yeah.
And anyway, rather than these guys duplicating experiments and or having to wait months to publish in the traditional way their material, this guy in England, Tim Berners-Lee, who, by the way, was featured and celebrated at the London Olympics. I don't know how
yes,
many people really...
I saw that, and I tried to explain that to the people that were... It was during the opening ceremonies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I tried to explain that, and it was met with almost blank stares.
Tim Berners-Lee is the Thomas Edison of the web. I mean, there is no web without that guy. I mean, everything, HTTP, links, hyperlinks, the whole thing was created out of his mind, the whole structure of the web. And nothing substantial has really changed. I mean, we've added image tags, and actually Mark Andreessen was the, as far as I understand, was the developer of the image tag. We've got video embed tags. We've added tags, that's for sure. But the basic structure of HTML and hypertext transfer protocol and that whole, you know, servers and clients and how that all works together all came from him. And yeah, I think he had a colleague working on it with him as well, whose name I don't know offhand. But, yeah, so that was he's a really significant guy. So, anyway, Mark saw the original web as it was developed with physicists in mind when he was working, like sweeping floors and emptying waste paper baskets, basically, as far as I understand, at the physics lab at University of Illinois. And he said, "Wow, this is great, but why isn't there a graphical interface? Because then it was all line, you know.
Yeah.
You'd type everything in line code or whatever they call it." And so he did it. He didn't do it, but he got a friend, Eric Bina, B-I-N-A, to write it. And, you know, half of life, or 90% of life, really, is getting the job done, whether you personally do it or whether you find someone who can do it. It doesn't really matter. It just matters that you get the job done. And Mark was the leader, and they did succeed in creating that. And then it was popular right away among the students at the university and other, you know, computer geeky kind of people. And then they developed different versions for different operating systems. And he spent about a year being the, you know, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week tech desk guy. You know, if you were having trouble uploading it or downloading or whatever you had to do with this thing to make it work, he would talk you through it and help you out. And I think within a year they had 1 million users, which is amazing. No advertising, no, you know, publicity, nothing.
Yeah,
and it was not part of the formal program. If you hear sawing in the background, there's always something being constructed somewhere nearby whenever I'm doing an interview. I don't know why, but I don't know if you hear it, but if not, but so there was no formal program at all. I mean, it was just these kids, really, their initiative as undergrads to do this amazing thing. And nobody paid attention. This is the thing everyone's really got to really wrap their mind around. Nobody paid attention. When Andreessen graduated, he did not graduate to a cushy job at Microsoft or Apple or any of these places. You couldn't get a job with any of those people. They just didn't get what he was doing. They didn't think it was significant. He got a job as sort of a junior engineer at some networking company in San Jose. It was just, you know, no big deal.
Yeah.
Which shows how it's like your friends watching the Olympics and seeing Tim Berners-Lee and not getting how significant that guy was and what he contributed was. So anyway, long story short, it was very easy if you had something intelligent to say to correspond with Mark, because
okay,
there weren't a whole lot of people knocking at his door. So that's how he and I met via email, and we just, you know, we were just talking about the future of the web, where this could go, how it was going to support itself, how it was going to get built out. He kind of envisioned a sponsorship model where you know, corporation would, you know, in order to get its name out there, would sponsor all kinds of content and then sponsor it kind of like the soap opera model, you know, of soap operas or
and...
And I sort of said, well, I think it's going to be a direct marketing model, and because that was my background. That's how I saw it, and
yeah.
I could already see, even though I didn't know how it was going to work out, I could already see that, wow, this is going to be the most measurable medium ever. I mean, you could tell when you could tell exactly how many people looked at a page. You could tell exactly how long they stayed on a page. You could tell exactly what link they clicked over another link. You could move links around on a page and see what got the most clicks.
You can track behavior down to essentially every movement online, and it's controversial. In terms of internet privacy today, but these same features and functionalities used in ethical, upstanding ways are really the core of the most successful direct marketing you can do.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be really complicated or nefarious. I mean, the simplest thing is just to see, you know, how many people hit your page, and then how many people click on the link, and then rearrange your page, put the link in a different place, change the color, change the headline, and just count. You know, it's really just a counting game, and see what generates the most response.
Absolutely.
And I know it can get way more complicated than that. And I guess one of the things that I preach, and I will preach on this call, is you know, the web can get, and web marketing can get really complicated really fast, and people can literally drown in the complexity of it. And don't do it. Stick to the basics.
Years ago, I learned what you call the first law of internet marketing from you, and it's provided both the foundation in how I work and when I help other people with their web marketing. And the first law of internet marketing, according to your book, System Secrets, is traffic plus conversion equals profits. And that has a way of simplifying every single thing that I do because I look, you know, say, for example, social media, which has become one of the technologies du jour in marketing today. What function does social media play? And primarily, in my experience, it plays a traffic function. So you make traffic your goal with social media and drive people to a direct response-oriented website for conversion. And that simplicity in internet marketing is really something that you have been the most clear and direct about out of almost anybody out there. You've been doing this for 18 years, and your message probably hasn't changed on that.
Well, you know, it helped that I came from a paper and ink direct marketing background where the cost of everything was just so extreme. You know, if you wanted to send out, you know, 10,000 letters, for example, which was, you know, remember, there was a time before email. You know,
yeah.
it's hard to imagine that now, but there was a time when there was no email. And so if you wanted to reach somebody directly, the way you had to do it was send them a postcard or a letter. And if you had something complex to sell or new to sell or involved, you need to send a letter. And, you know, when you're talking about letters, you know, even if you could be really economical, you're talking about at least in those days 50 cents a letter to get a letter in the mail, but more like a dollar. So if you wanted to send out, you know, 10,000 messages, you're looking at $5,000 to $10,000.
Yeah.
And when you're spending that kind of money, you get really particular about response, you know, because you can't survive. You can't survive without it working. There's only so many times you can fall on your face before they take you off the playing field and you're done.
it develops a no-nonsense attitude. And I'll admit, you know, myself and other folks like me who've come up primarily during the internet days. I mean, I was on AOL very early, but I wasn't marketing on AOL. But I've certainly come up during the internet days, and I am spoiled rotten that you could communicate with, you know, 250, 300,000 people at hardly any cost. you know, a single message to those folks in the days of physical mail would, like you said, you know, it could easily run $250,000-$300,000.
I have a network of websites. It's like a side project that's, you know, become, you know, worthwhile to do, and our method is based on a daily mailing, daily email.
Okay.
That people look forward to, and I think I send out like 150,000 emails a day, every day, 365 days a week, and sometimes it's more. And imagine if I was trying to do that with postage. I mean, it would be, I'd need a warehouse. I'd need armies of people, you know, running around making all this happen. It would be a nightmare.
For all intents and purposes, that would be impossible. And the flip side of that is that the web has created models like that that simply didn't exist before technology made it so affordable, cheap, whatever word you want to use to describe that. Now, along these lines, I would like to talk about kind of internet marketing past, present, and future. And I think that this is a good spot to kind of move into that. Now, we've talked a lot about the past, and there were obviously some folks that thought that the internet changed everything, but the meme or the idea that's prevailed was that same idea that you had back in 1994, that those folks who do the best marketing on the internet adopt a direct marketing model and integrate, mm-hmm. you know, the technologies available into that direct marketing model. Now, what's going on today that kind of adds to that? You talked about being able to do daily emails and lists mm-hmm. of 150,000 people. What's going on today that really adds to that that foundation?
That's a really good question. Might be simple-minded, but I don't think we've got a lot of variations on the theme, but I don't think we've gotten past that basic theme. The only thing I'd say that's important is maybe from a business building point of view, and there's a couple of things that I think really need to be said, is, you know, number one is the internet really is just a medium to reach and communicate with people. It's not a business unto itself. So we use internet marketing, the term internet marketing, as shorthand, but I think it confuses a lot of people, especially a lot of people that are new to business or don't have much business experience, and there's this thought that, well, there's something magical about the internet. You know, if I just do something on the internet, I'll make money and great things will happen. And that's really doesn't work that way. It's you need a business concept first, and even before the business concept is you need a market. You need a market that wants and or needs something, and you need to be a top level, top grade provider of that thing, whatever it is. And then the internet becomes interesting. So you've probably seen it. I mean, all the get-rich-quick kind of pitches and all the, hey, you know, I've just found this method, and if you send me so many hundreds or thousands of dollars, I'll show you the method, and you too can be like me. And
well, heck, you know I won't even show you the method. I'll build the website that sends you, you know, checks. All you do is you send me a check for $10,000, and you'll receive a website in your name, and it will create a $10,000 a month income stream for you.
Yep.
That can be pushed to even larger extremes.
And then you see, and so there's that world of just the outright, you know, in your face scammers, but then there's also web, you know, I don't know, mainstream web developers. I mean, had a conversation with a friend of mine. It's funny, she came to one of my events as a camera person, and she actually edited a whole seminar, and I guess she wasn't paying attention to the content because she ended up spending, oh my God, I think it was $80,000 with a web developer to create this whole website and all the background programming for a business idea that was completely untested and unknown whether it would work or not.
Oh, wow.
And this is these are common stories. I mean, these, in fact, that was the reason I started doing brought the system out in 2002. Because I had stopped doing public events around 98, 99. And I was just hearing of all these horror stories of, well, I spent $15,000 on my website. I'm like, you did what? Why did you do that? You don't need to spend $15,000 or $5,000. And it still goes on today. It still goes on today. People not grasping that it's not the Internet, it's the idea. And the idea that makes the difference is the idea that makes the difference. The Internet is just a way to make it all work. And that the idea has to be a market idea. I know it sounds really ridiculously obvious, but it's easy to lose sight of it. And all successful marketing ventures, real ones, not hit-and-run scam ventures, but real ones, are based on a real market that has real wants and needs that you can reach and that you can actually be a provider of top-level services or products for that market. That's where you have to start. You can't start with, I want to do something on the Internet, or I have a great idea that I think would work great on the Internet.
I can spoil the secret to Internet marketing, and this is out of your book, System Secrets, which is a great read, and it's available through your KenMccarthy.com website, right?
Yep.
We'll give that address again later, but the chapter one, the secret, is all about the first thing that you need to do to be successful online, and it has nothing to do with putting up a website. It's exactly what you're talking about. You find a market that you have three criteria that is easy to reach, have a burning need for what you've got, and have demonstrated through past behavior an ability and willingness to spend money on the kinds of things you plan to sell. So it really... It's a lesson that it's easy to get caught up in all the latest tips and tricks for, you know, say video sales letters, which, you know, it's a great technique. It's a great tactic to use. But where everything has to start is at that market, because if you don't have the market for your products that is proven that they're willing to buy that, and that's why so many, you know what I find I suppose I would consider you an old pro based on your years of experience. And so many old pros go back to the very fundamentals of marketing. And it's easy to gloss over because it seems so simple and so not exciting. But what folks need to understand for success in marketing is that it is these simple lessons that matter most. And so I'm glad that that you're still out there championing ideas like this that are deceptively simple.
Well, if you think of house building, right? There's all these different styles of houses, and you can have a very plain house or a very fancy house or a very traditional house or a very modern house. But somebody at some point has to lay in a basement or at least a foundation. And it's not a thrilling part of the business of house building, and it's not glamorous. But if you don't do it, you can't build the house. And if you do it wrong, everything else will be a disaster, you know. And it's really that way in marketing, too. These foundation things, literally, it's not just a word we throw around. It's literally the foundation. And so if you have the foundation right, you can build just about any house you want, any style you want, any size you want. As long as the foundation can support it. But if you don't pay attention to the foundation, if you're worried about, you know, the trim on the windows or putting an old weather vane on top of the house to make it look, you know, authentic, you know, none of these things have any meaning unless you've got a foundation. And it's very typical for inexperienced business people or even experienced ones that get carried away to neglect the boring parts of the business, which are just figuring out, hey, is there a market for this thing? Can we reach them economically? And then you raised a really important point. I'm glad you did, because it's really, really important, and it's so easy to not get this. We're not looking to sell things so much as we're looking to find buyers. And that may seem like semantic, you know, gibberish, okay?
Yeah.
But there are people in the world who are buyers. All right, follow me on this. For instance, I am never going to be a buyer. Well, you never say never, but I'm pretty sure at this point in my life, I am never going to be a buyer of bowling balls and bowling shoes and bowling gloves, all right?
Yeah.
So I am not a bowling stuff buyer. So all the marketing and all the money spent on me in the universe, you could spend well, if you gave me $1 trillion, I guess I would become a buyer, but it, you know, all the money spent to persuade me to be a buyer of bowling stuff is never going to work. So when you're marketing, it's not so much that you're trying to be the world's greatest salesman. And we have a book that we published on this, by the way. And I'm going to draw a blank on the title. Isn't this terrible? Because it's not a well-titled book. Let me see if I can grab this. This is a book I only found recently, and I was so amazed by it that I put it in print.
Is this the Harry Brown book?
The Harry Brown book, exactly.
Is it Secrets to Selling Anything? Is that
exactly? It's the secret of selling anything.
The secret of selling anything. Yeah. And you actually, I bought it as an ebook from his widow.
Right.
She had a little site up. Mostly, he's known as he was a presidential candidate at one point for the Libertarian Party, and he's known as an investment writer and market and freedom oriented writer. But he was also an exceptional salesperson, and he wrote this kind of secret to my success. It reads almost like a journal, not like he wrote it to be a bestseller.
He actually wrote it to support, because when he was way back when he was, you know, just getting started, one of the things that he did to make money was he was a sales trainer. And so he created a sales training course that my understanding was it was very successful and very popular. And he wrote these notes, which never were published, specifically and exclusively for the people who were taking his classes. He never tried to get it published. And then his wife has put it in an ebook form. And then I read this thing, thanks to Gary Bensavenga, who you mentioned earlier. And I read this. He's the one who pointed it out to me. And I read it. I was just knocked out because it's It's the sales book. And so I got permission to print a limited run of them. But the point that he makes, and it's a point, and I love, this is why I love the book, because it's something that I always felt, I just couldn't express it as well as he did, is that it's pointless to become the master salesman. What you really need to do is know how to find the buyers and then work with the buyers in a way that's pleasing to them. This turns selling upside down, because selling is usually like, hey, you got to be aggressive, you need all these tricks, you need all these techniques, you need NLP, you need, you know, all these things, and then you go out there and you find people and you bludgeon them into buying from you, and then you pat yourself on the back, you know, for what a great, you know, salesperson you are. That's kind of the model. And the real model...
A quick divergence. I knew a sales guy like that. I sold newspaper subscriptions to our local newspaper for a couple of years. And one of the guys that went with us to sell newspapers at the grocery stores, he would actually, and this was incredibly offensive to me because it's not my style at all, but he would actually grab somebody's cart and bring it over to his little stand he had set up so that they would have to come over to the stand and talk to him. And it's a very aggressive and bad feeling way to be sold to, but Harry Brown's approach, which we're going to go into, is a very different, much more comfortable and satisfying way to be sold what you want to buy already.
And it's a lot easier on the salesman.
If you're
a really thick-skinned, you know, hard-assed person and who doesn't mind tons and tons of rejection, and also doesn't mind limiting the size of your market, because really most people do not want to be pushed around and don't respond well to it. So yes, you will sell if you take that hard edged approach, but you'll sell much less than you could sell if you took an approach that was, you know, more appealing to the average person. And so really getting this right is having, first of all, and this is often left out of internet marketing discussions, is do you have something really worthwhile to bring to the market? That's really got to be the question. And I think the reason that question's not raised very often is it's a lot of work to develop something or to source something or to, you know, package something that's really good for the market, for
Absolutely.
A marketplace. It's, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a lot easier to say...
Oh, my favorite rule regarding this is, and I forget exactly who I got it from, but you want your product to be to provide 10 times the value of the price you charge at a bare minimum. And that's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. Steve Jobs said something like that. He said if you want to bring a new product into an existing marketplace, it needs to be 10 times better than everything else out there, not 2% better or 5% better. So you're looking for an existing a real marketplace, literally, where that's alive. People are already buying and selling. They're already in it. There's already distributors. There's already retail. And I'm going beyond the internet model right now, but there's already distributors in place. There's already retail stores in place. There's already catalogs. There's already maybe hopefully magazines devoted to it. It's alive. And those are and within that market, there are, this seems really ridiculously simple, there are buyers. There are people that don't need to be persuaded. They just need to see something good. They need to see something that makes sense because they're already in the market looking. We have a model that we call the road repair model of marketing creation, which is a lot of people try to create a great product in their basement or their rec room or their wherever, and, off by themselves. And the best way to create a great product is to get to know a particular, a specific market intimately, know what's selling, know what's popular, know what the trends are, and then find out what's missing from that product or what's missing from the marketplace in general, or find out something that is doing okay or maybe even doing well that has a lot of rough edges to it, bumps in the road. And make things simpler. For example, this wasn't a marketing thing, but when Mark Andreessen put a simple graphical interface, a browser, on the web, he suddenly took something that was already had some juice and some energy and some momentum, the online world, and he took the bump out of it. The bump was I got to go to CompuServe and I got to log in, and they're going to charge me per the minute. And, oh, my God, I got phone line charges and all this. And he just, by utilizing the existing web and putting a browser on it, he took that bump away. So either finding something that's working, that's not working really well, make it bigger if it's too small, make it small if it's too big, make it portable if it's not portable, make it stationary if it's too, just find a way to twist the thing.
And again, these are deceptively simple lessons to simply go out. You think you found a market that you're interested in selling to, building a business around, or even a market that you already have started to build a business within. And you go out and you simply talk to people and say, what's missing? What could be better? What's an ideal scenario? One of my first clients, folks that I worked with, and we ended up putting the business on Inc. Magazine's list of America's fastest growing private businesses and doubled the business and had a lot of success there. The guy was a computer trainer, for folks that work on computer networks, that sort of thing, for the Navy. And the model at the time was primarily was teaching things in classrooms. And so if a company wanted somebody to be trained on, the new set of Cisco networking gear, they would actually send people to a training center, and there would be hotel bills, and there'd be, the fees for the training itself, and all the expenses associated with that. And then if that person left the company, the knowledge and the investment went with the person. Well, what this guy did was he actually created video training to the certification, so it was all around a specific defined knowledge set. He created this video training, and you could buy it for yourself as an individual, but companies could also buy it with a license that could be basically a seat license that could be shared between folks. So it became an investment in the company's technology rather than in individuals' technology. And it was all a matter of identifying, what could be better about this model instead of these trainers. And through this, he was actually able to recruit some of the top trainers in the world, folks that developed the test questions for the test that he was training to, because of the fact that, you know, he was bottling this up and selling it multiple times rather than the old method that was very inefficient of delivering it over and over again. And he was a stellar success simply because he found this hole in the market and filled it. And it's very simple but powerful.
Yeah, I mean there it is. And if you want a high probability of success, and nobody can guarantee success, and you never know how things will shake out until you try. But if you want a high probability of success, that's what you do. In his case, he was in a market. He got to know that particular market. He had some skills and some connections and that he built up by being in the market. And then he had an insight, hey, we could do this better. And the great thing is when you really know a market and you come up with something that is obviously patently better, you'll get support. You'll get enthusiasm, not only from buyers but from vendors and potential partners. I mean, that was kind of, you know, when I launched the system seminar in 2002, first of all, believe it or not, this may be hard to imagine, but there were no internet marketing seminars then. This was right after the dot-com crash. It was after 9/11. A lot of people had given up any hope that the internet would be an opportunity, if you can imagine that. But that's where the mindset was.
Yeah.
And I said, well, this is ridiculous. This is just a temporary bump in the road. Clearly, the internet's a viable marketing medium. And then I approached it in a very unsensational, meat and potatoes, real world way, and that was very refreshing too. So when we
you've always stood out for that voice among all the hype. You are the guy that just talks straight about what this is.
Yeah, well, that's what I do. You know, it's been a little weird, you know, to see this. Just, I'm trying to think of the right word. I'm trying to think of a polite word. Flood of hype, you know, that came on, you know, kind of like 2000, started coming on around 2003, 2004, and then it just accelerated. And yeah, it's been kind of frustrating because there's a really interesting book called Breakthrough Advertising by Gene Schwartz, and he makes a really great copywriter. He makes a really valid point is, in a marketplace, especially a big marketplace, it's kind of like a war, arms race. Bigger promises, greater claims, and those tend to win. You know, those tend to, in time, win out. And so you either have to join that arms race or, you know, not, you know.
You and sell with the, it or sell against it, which is what's been what you've done for.
You can, but you have to be willing to take less than you see other people getting, you know.
Yeah.
But you just have to, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, why am I doing this ultimately? Well, you're doing it to make money because we all need to make money, and few of us can afford to just do whatever we want with any, you know, consideration of whether it's profitable or not. But then the other question is why, you know, beyond that, why am I doing it? And so I always, and this is another good thing when you're looking to go into a business, is it's something I like. Like, I like teaching. I like working with small business people and small groups and, you know, not small nonprofits. You know, I like the David and Goliath situation. You know, I like somebody starting from scratch with no particular monetary or social advantages and helping them by giving them tools they can use to grow what they're doing. You know, for instance, one thing I'm working on that I've been working on consistently since 2006 and I'm really proud of is I helped grow a group called levies.org, which is a sort of a kitchen table nonprofit. It started after the levee collapses in New Orleans. And it was just a, you know, woman we could call her a housewife because that's what she was, and her son, and who was, you know, built the website. And what they wanted to do was sort of rally New Orleanians to tell the truth about the city and what really happened and how it happened. And they really, boy, they were swimming upstream when they started because there was one story put out by the media and by the government, and there's a real story the engineers were trying to get out about why those levees really failed and the bad construction and the, you know, all this other stuff. And there's just one woman, really, and she has VBAC, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which is a massive organization. It's so huge that and even if you have a big enough pie chart of the federal government's budget, you can actually see a little slice goes to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah.
And it's this one lady battling that massive force. They've spent millions and millions of dollars on PR just to cover their tracks around New Orleans. And they've got all kinds of connections and media connections and political connections and industry connections and so on. And bit by bit, year by year, she makes steady progress. And now we have many, many journalists around the world that no longer talk about Katrina damaging New Orleans. We talk about the levee failures, you know. And you know, it may seem like a small point, but if you live in New Orleans, that's a city that you love, and you want to make sure the levees are rebuilt correctly the next time, you know, it's kind of a life and death issue. And
that's fascinating.
Working with people like that, whether it's a profit thing or a nonprofit thing, that's what I find really, really interesting. So anyway, it goes back to, if you're in a popular or growing market, there will be an arms race of ever increasing outlandish claims, and you can either join it, assuming you can back up your claims, or you can just do your own thing, and just let the chips fall where they may. I mean, the ideal thing, frankly, I never really intended to do a lot in internet marketing education. It just kind of, there it was, and nobody was doing anything with it, and it just seemed crazy, so I jumped in, and then, you know, things have a way of, you know, tearing you off.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to wrap up very quickly here, and frankly, there's no way that your years and years of experience in this and in business and direct marketing can be encompassed in an hour, and obviously you have to leave out much of what you know and can share and can help people. But you have always been at the leading edge and even pushing those folks at the bleeding edge in new technologies that can be brought back into that direct marketing equation. Is there any new technology out there that most of us don't know about yet, or new anything that can contribute to those two core things of traffic and conversion that are really exciting you? What's the future?
The future is a lot of hard work and no secret tricks. But there is a company that I have been following, not as a customer, but as a marketer, and I think people should study this company, this founder, and their approach, and it's called FAB, F-A-B. And
okay.
What they do is they sell limited-run designer things, like, you know, people that like to buy stuff for their house, their homes, that want something different. They don't want to go to Walmart or Target or even Saks Fifth Avenue. They want something that's only a few hundred copies made of. And the world's full of designers that make interesting housewares that don't have an outlet. So he's created a market. He and his team have created a marketplace for these folks. But he's done it by a really interesting melding of classic retailing, classic direct marketing, and integrating social media with those models. And
okay.
So I don't think there's any new technology out there that's really worth getting excited about, but I do think there's ever more rigorous applications of old school selling, like classic retailing, you know, like classic direct marketing, and then integrating that with some of the social media tools and some of the other tools that we already have. In other words, I don't think the technology is driving this anymore. I think it's merchandising ability and marketing smarts.
Okay. Well, in 2 minutes, can you tell listeners about the System Club, what it is, what you get if you become a member of the System Club?
Yeah, the System Club originally started as graduates of the System Seminar, and now I've opened it up to everybody. And basically since 2002, so it's now 10 years old, I've been interviewing, you know, just everybody that you can imagine. You referred to the founders of the creators of the Ginsu knife. And almost anybody you can think of in marketing that's ever done anything interesting. And you won't find these people interviewed anywhere else. Harvard University and me are the only people that bothered to track down the creators of the Ginsu knife and interviewed them.
a testament to what you've done there is one of your big interviews was with Gary Bensavenga, who had literally not shared his secrets to successful copywriting outside of the closed doors of his clients' offices. He hadn't put on his one single seminar in his life yet, but he and you had I believe it was almost a 3-hour phone conversation. I've listened to it a few times myself.
That's the only thing. Gary very graciously made me the sole proprietor of that interview, and the agreement I made with him, which obviously I've stuck to, is that interview is only for System Club members. That's it. So if you want to hear the world's most successful direct mail copywriter of his generation, and everybody agreed to that. There's nobody that ever said, I know somebody better. Gary was the moneymaker in that field. And there's only one interview, and we've got it, and it's only for System Club members. So that's the kind of thing in our archive. You won't find, here's the 99th interview with fill-in-the-blank internet guru. I don't do that stuff. I don't have that stuff.
Yeah.
What I have are real people doing real things in the real world that you sometimes cannot find anywhere else at any price. We've got all that. And then every month we do what I call a mastermind call, where I talk with somebody that's really sharp in some area of marketing. We do a thing called Tech Talk, which is our second call every month, which is about the tools. And there are a lot of fascinating tools out there. And then the other thing we do is called Second Saturday. That's our third call. So we do three calls a month.
Oh, wow.
Second Saturday is me on the phone just, looking at particular businesses, giving advice, to very specific advice to very specific people. Not generic stuff, but like, let's look at this guy's site. Oh, you can do this, you could do that. Here's how you could change your model. Here's how you could sell more. Test this, test that. So you get that. There's ongoing training going on all the time. And then you have access to our archive, and our archive now has 10 years worth of interviews. I mean, I interviewed the guys that did the Blair Witch Project. These guys shot this film with a crummy camera, and they sold $280 million worth of seats, and they told me the whole story about how they marketed that thing. And I don't think anybody else ever asked them. It's crazy. I don't know why people don't go out and do this. We've got this stuff.
What I find among the folks who are interviewed in the System Club is when they were interviewed, they weren't famous. Some of them are much more famous now. I mean, Perry Marshall is a great example of someone who went on from attending, I believe, the first system seminar to world-renowned status as an AdWords marketing expert and online direct marketing expert and now Facebook marketing expert, although most folks... the names you won't recognize, but the content may be even better. So it's very interesting. And folks can find that. I will provide a link if you're on the Live with Roy website, but folks can find that at thesystemclub.com. Again, thesystemclub.com. And also your personal blog where you talk about a lot of these topics and point people towards additional resources is kenmccarthy.com. And that's spelled kenmccarthy.com. Again, kenmccarthy.com and thesystemclub.com. So I encourage everybody who's listening to check Ken out further. And Ken, thank you very much for being so generous with your time and joining me for a Live with Roy call.
Great. I hope people found this helpful.
I'm certain they will. Thank you, Ken.
Hey there, this is Roy Furr, and I just want to say thank you for tuning in to another Live with Roy interview. If you haven't already joined us, I encourage you to drop everything and go to www.livewithroy.com. Join us today, and you'll get first priority notification when new interviews are posted and ready for you to listen. This is the single best way for you to get access to all the new interviews I post with the world's leading experts on information marketing and publishing, internet marketing, copywriting, selling, business success, and a whole lot more. I'll even send you a free gift by email right away when you join now. It costs you nothing but your name and email address, and the content you'll get could be transformational to your life and business. All you have to do is go to www.livewithroy.com and join us now. Again, that's www.livewithroy.com. Thanks again for listening. I'll talk to you again soon.